You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome into this week's Civic Media Spotlight. First up, we'll hear from Earl Ingram. This week on the Earl Ingram Show, he expressed his frustration and confusion over the number of everyday union workers who are supporting Donald Trump. Earl digs into who unions have historically voted for and points out the clear reasons why voting for Trump is anti-union.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. I want to talk to my fellow blue-collar workers. And for those of you who don't know, that's what I am. That's who I am. I spent 32 years in industry. I'm a blue-collar guy. I'm proud of it. And so, you know, there's some things going on now that I don't understand. When I was a blue collar worker, we knew that Democrats were the ones that looked out for our best interests. We knew that. The majority of us voted Democrat, blue collar workers. We were the backbone of the Democratic Party. What happened? 855-752-4842. So I was reading this article in today's The New Yorker and on yesterday, but I was reading it today, this morning. Can Harris stop blue-collar workers from defecting to Donald Trump? What? Blue-collar workers? You know, the one thing that we always understood as blue-collar workers was that Democrats were the ones who always were concerned about us. If what I'm saying is inaccurate, 855-752-4842, correct me. But today, you know, blue-collar workers across this nation, many of them are turning against the Democratic Party because they're saying the Democratic Party turned against them. And I don't know what they're talking about. President Joe Biden and his plan that he put together to address the issues that many blue-collar workers were suffering from was stopped by Republicans. They chose not to allow his plans to move forward. Those plans were earmarked towards helping those people in rural Wisconsin, rural America, and people who used to be in the strong Democratic strongholds. He attempted to address that. It was the Republican Party that turned it down. It's just a fact. So I don't understand. Let me read a couple paragraphs of this. In June 2016, Scott Sautrich, the president of the United Steelworkers Local 2227, a branch based in West Mifflin, Pennsylvania, drove for half an hour to a Union Hall in Pittsburgh where Hillary Clinton was holding a campaign rally. Suchrich was hoping that Clinton would, whom the USW had just endorsed, would talk about jobs in the steel industry. Instead, she focused on the character flaws of Donald Trump, calling him temperamentally unfit and totally unqualified. As Suchrich listened, he grew frustrated. What did she plan to do for the workers? Afterwards, he told me. Clinton shook hands with the supporters. Suchrich stood there in his union shirt, but Clinton didn't extend her hand to him. "Hey, Hillary," he called out, prompting her to turn around. "I'm the union president. We really need your help." He remembers her saying curtly, "Oh, I will help," then leaving. That November, Suchrich voted for Clinton. But this fall, he's backing Donald Trump in part because he believes that Democrats don't actually care about the working class, a group defined by posters as people without college degrees. If Suchrich was still running Local 2227, he might have felt pressure to keep his decision private since the USW, like most unions, is supporting Kamala Harris. But he left his post in 2022 and is now free to speak his mind. Most of the rank and file workers Suchrich knows share his view, and he told me, regardless of what that union leader say publicly, "I don't care what you see on TV," he said. "The grunts in the lunchroom love Trump." Now, I do know that what he is saying, as far as, you know, most of the union members, or quite a few of those union members, support Donald Trump. And I don't, you know, for the life of me. Well, the Democrats turned away from us. They left us in the lurch. And so we can't vote Democrat anymore. We've got to vote Republican. And what have the Republicans promised you? Nothing. You know, it's one thing to say the Democrats turned their back on us, but then you would expect that the people you're going to vote for are offering you something. What have they offered? 855-752-4842. It's not enough to say the Democrats turned their backs on us, so we're going to vote for Donald Trump. Okay, let's say I buy that. Well, then there's got to be some rationale for why you're going to vote for the other guy. Not long ago, America's steel mills and factories were full of loyal Democrats. These union members understood that in the struggle between labor and capital, Republicans sided with management. Where has that changed? 855-752-4842. That's still there. Republicans are siding with management. They always have. They always will. Donald Trump is representing the Republican Party. Whether he's that or not, you know, that's a horse of a different color. But the truth of what I'm talking about is Republicans clearly side with management. Democrats side with the unions. So how is it possible that if you're a union member, and unions have been under attack, not by Democrats, they've been under attack by Republicans, as long as throughout my entire life, I'm a union guy, right? I know who's been on our side and who hasn't been on our side. Maybe one of the problems is, and I've said this to union leaders for a long time, union leaders have dropped the ball because they haven't trained or educated their members. And so members become members of the unions without knowing anything about the history of the unions and the union struggle and the union fight. And so people walk into unions today and say, I don't need the union. The union is for weak people. You know, I'm a great worker, so management is going to take care of me. They don't know. That's not how it works. Not long ago, America's steel mills and factories were full of loyal Democrats. These union members understood that in a struggle between labor and capital, Republicans sided with management. One of the workers who shared this outlook was Sartre's father, Herman, a retired steel worker and the person who introduced me to Scott. When Herman was young, he told me employees knew there wasn't a Republican in the, I don't know, can I say goddamn? Oh, okay. Well, okay. Well, that's what it says. It's goddamn world that ever tried to help the working guy out. Herman, an 83-year-old who wears a ring inscribed with the USW logo on his right hand, still believes this. He raised his children, 5 sons and a daughter, in a household that he thought would instill the same perspective in them. To his dismay, 3 of his sons support Trump. I don't know where I screwed up, he said, with a sigh. Blue-collar workers supporting Donald Trump. That's an oxymoron, man. I don't even know how that should even be possible. You know, 855-752-4842. You know, I noticed some of you out there in the audience who are like that. So, if you will, give you a fair shot. Explain that to a guy like me who's a union man at heart. I'm still a union man. So, you'd have a hard time explaining to me how you being a union guy are willing to support a guy who's anti-union. 855-752-4842. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear from Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. This week, Pat welcomed in former colleague Dan Canyon, now with the Harris Walz campaign, as their battleground director. He and Pat talk about our own battleground state, Wisconsin, and how the Harris Walz campaign is charting a course to victory.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio. Now let's pivot over back to the campaign. I first got to know Dan Cannon in the state capitol. I was a senator. He was chief of staff to Senator Bob Jauch. He has since become very busy on the national scene from a campaign standpoint, to the point where he is now a battleground director for the Harris Walz campaign. And I got to catch up with him yesterday as the campaigns continue to crisscross the Midwest, including Wisconsin. And Dan Cannon joins us now to talk about the state of the campaign. DK, how are you?
I'm great, Pat. How are you doing?
Wonderful. It is so good to see you. It's been a while since our state capitol days together, but you are doing wonderful things on the national scene. Obviously, you know, from a national campaign standpoint, we see momentum from the Harris campaign. We see, you know, Trump doing Trumpian things. When you look at the state of the race now, 34 days out, the VP debate is behind us. Where do you see the Harris Walz campaign in terms of what they have to do to seal the deal in battleground states like Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, with 34 days, Pat, we're still in a very, very close race. And it's something that we've expected this entire time. You know, Wisconsin is one of the seven or so states, it has been a true toss-up. And I don't mean a toss-up like a couple of points or 3 points. I mean, well inside a point. It's looked that way this entire year. It was that way in 2020. It was that way in 2016. Go to the Wayback Machine, 2004, 2000, both races inside a percentage point. There's just a lot of political gravity in this state. And I think that we have to reckon with the reality that we're going to have this tight race. But the thing that we're doing in Wisconsin, and truthfully across the battlegrounds, but Wisconsin's the best example of this, is campaigning everywhere and being in community with people, talking to them, cutting through in a way that's hard, frankly, in a very fragmented media environment otherwise. But we have 50 offices across 43 counties in Wisconsin, 250 staff. We're engaging thousands and thousands of volunteers every single week. Up through now, we've done 500,000 door knocks, and that's going to just increase exponentially as the race goes on. And that's to say nothing of the thousands and thousands of community events you do, phone banking, trainings, watch parties for the debate like we had last night. All of that, I think, adds to this feeling that you have a community that's caring about the same values, whether it's protecting reproductive freedoms, whether it's lowering costs, whether it's protecting and preserving Obamacare or Social Security and Medicare against this very draconian, mega extreme agenda we see from J.D. Vance and Donald Trump. The stakes are clear, but you have to have people on the ground, especially in a tight race, to cut through the noise and have those conversations, and then to do things like get voters registered, you know, or push them out to vote where they need a little more information, the kind of mechanics that make a tight race winnable. We've been investing in that all year long. Donald Trump has not. And so I don't think you see that in the polls, but we see that very much as a central part of our plan to win a tight race.
Now, you're significantly younger than me, but we're both old enough to remember when people thought we were a little crazy to advocate for Democrats doing more campaigning a decade ago or so in Waukesha County and the Wow counties, and having to remind people that while they may be very high in terms of Republican percentage, they're also high in quantity in terms of Democratic voters. So I've been one of the first to say, of course, a Donald Trump would have to show up in Dane County at some point. And so now he is, because, again, there's a lot of bodies there.
Yeah.
So now that he's done that thing, which is actually not as strange as some people might think, it leads to this question. You talk about being everywhere all the time. What is it that the Harris-Walz team could be doing best in Wisconsin to get that, again, everywhere all the time thing? It doesn't necessarily mean shaking hands in Waukesha County, but it also means, how have we always talked about it? You can't always just squeeze one more vote out of Dane or Milwaukee counties if you're going to win Wisconsin.
That's very true, Pat. And look, on the Dane County point, and I think you're right, Trump's going there because there's a lot of people in Dane County. It's the fastest growing county in the state. And there's a volume of voters there, whether or not they're highly Democratic, which they are. But in truth, the Dane County performance has been, you know, the Democratic base for sure, right? Showing up again and again and again. But what's happened after 2016, this is true in 18, in 20, in 2022, and some of the off-year elections in 2023, suburban voters, independents, moderate Republicans started leaving the Republican Party and moving into the Democratic column. There's a lot of those suburban votes in and around Madison and Dane County that used to be Republican votes. And I think Trump is trying to go back there. But the reality is those voters, I think, have really are repelled by this extreme agenda. And I think to your point about what you can be doing differently or better or how we can tackle this challenge, the point I'd make is we've been doing this all year. You know, we built this campaign leadership team in Wisconsin in January, actually December, hired the first wave of folks in January and February, you know, went from a couple dozen, you know, to tens of dozens to hundreds of staff now across the state. They've been talking to these folks the entire time. This is stuff that does not show up in a poll, as I said. But when it comes down to the wire and you have to move votes, you know, just a few votes per county, right? Which is really, at the end of the day, what the margin could end up being in some of these places. And that effort, that margin of effort, as Michael Tyler said, as opposed to margin of error, I think is what's required to win a close race. I don't think Donald Trump and the Trump campaign believes in engaging voters and having a relationship with people. I think they simply want to have the rallies, have the cult of personality, you know, rely on the media and social media to kind of propel them a bit. But we believe that when the race is tight and tough, that's what kind of is the fullback dive, you know, at the goal line, which is a play they don't have in their playbook, Pat.
Yeah, got to make the case and then get people excited to affirm the case at the ballot box. Dan Indeed. Cannon, it's always so great to talk to you. Thanks for the visit today.
Thanks, Pat.
Always nice to catch up with old friends and colleagues, especially going way back as far as we do, where, and this is to take nothing away from folks like Dan, but when you know them as like, you know, little capital staffers, and then you, you watch, he starts volunteering for this campaign, working for that campaign.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, there's all this talk about Pete Buttigieg on Fox News and how great he is handling the moderator or the newscasters,
yeah,
quote unquote, on Fox.
Yeah.
DK is number two on that list.
DK is amazing.
He is. He's so good at this. Yeah. I wouldn't encourage anybody to pay attention to right-wing media, but if you're channel surfing and you see Dan, you're going to want to listen into that.
Stick around, folks.
Yep. Okay, I'll ask Todd Alba coming up next about some of Donald Trump's comments in Wisconsin. That's up next. You're up north.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Next up, we go to Matinair on Air. This week, Jane and Greg welcomed in Lee McGowan, a.k.a. The Politics Girl, to talk about her book, A Return to Common Sense, as well as to get her take on the political landscape leading up to the election.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Sweet Cal B on the board, coming to you live from our studio in sunny downtown Waukesha, Wisconsin. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. It's the same number, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform that Elon continues to actively ruin. Very excited to have our guest join us. I'm trying not to fangirl all over her. She is the Politics Girl. You can find her all over the place at I Am Politics Girl. Lee McGowan is here. Now you're a best-selling New York Times author as well. Congratulations and welcome.
Well, thank you, Jane, and it's really exciting. I mean, for a first-time author like me to be a bestseller is amazing because, you know, the RNC is not out there buying my books. The Democrats aren't out there buying my books. These are people around the country buying my books because they actually believe in returning to common sense and, like, making democracy work.
And that is the name of the book. It's called The Return to Common Sense, How to Fix America Before We Really Blow It. And I love the very beginning of the book, Lee, because it's essentially a civics lesson for those of us who are not deep into politics and necessarily the inner workings of how things work in government. That should be required reading for everybody.
Yeah, listen, I don't want people to feel bad about not understanding politics. I think that was done by design. You know, what have we been told to not talk about our whole life? Politics and religion, right? And what are the two things that cause the most problems in the history of the world? Politics and religion. Yep. And then we don't know how to talk about it and we can't fix it, right? So after the introduction of the book, I literally put 20 pages of what I just call America 101, because I think so many of us don't understand how it works, and then we don't know how to fix it. If you told me, hey, Lee, the problem with your car is the carburetor, and I would be like, that's great, Jane. What's the carburetor?
And where do I find it?
If you don't know, how do you fix it, right? So I just wanted to have a section at the beginning, and I literally say at the top of it, if you know how the government works, if you know how our laws are made, if you understand the three branches of government, skip this section. It's not for you. But if you're like, oh, it's been a long time since I heard Schoolhouse Rock, I wasn't really paying attention in high school, this is 20 pages for you to literally put us on the literal same page moving forward into the book.
And what I love about you and what I love about your videos, Lee, is you take what can be very complicated and complex issues and you break them down into very easily digestible pieces and easy to understand. And really, I highly encourage everyone to pick up this book, if nothing else, just for the first 20 pages, because it's just such a good primer on the basics of how the U.S. government works. It's fantastic.
Well, thanks, Jane. I really appreciate that. I do hope people will read past page 21. but the rest of the book is also written in this kind of conversational way. And I set it out to make it easy for us to have these conversations again. I mean, you guys are in Wisconsin. This is the perfect example. You know, like, you are a 50-50 state. It doesn't reflect that in your legislature a lot of the time because you guys were gerrymandered into the ground. But in general, we are a 50-50, you know, like, we want to have these conversations, but people feel, they feel conflicted and they don't want to get in fights with their family and they don't want to have this thing. So I set up the rest of the book under what I call the six American principles, right? That are six things that no matter where you sit on the political spectrum, we can all agree make America, America. And that's from principle one, America is a land of freedom, to principle six, government should be a force for good. And I think these are six things that no matter where we sit, we're going to agree on. And then I just kind of go into why those are our fundamental principles based on history, where we kind of went off track, and how we can get back on track. And I think it starts a conversation for people where we're not all fighting with each other. We're not all screaming at each other. We can agree on the basic principle and then move forward from there.
And I think, as you said, Lee, I think there are far more things upon which we agree, no matter what side of the political spectrum that you're on, than want to divide us. And that's why there is so much effort to get us divided, to make it seem like we can't agree on anything. Mm. So what's the point? That's not true. There are far more things on which we agree. It's just getting past all of the other crap before we can get there.
Well, exactly. I mean, you said it right when you introduced me. You were like, the platform that Elon is now destroying, right? That platform was my favorite platform because it was a place... and I'm talking about original Twitter, was the place where you could call the people you wanted to hear from.
Yes.
So I could pick immunologists, I could pick journalists, I could pick, you know, experts in history, and I could hear what they had to say about topics. And I loved that about old Twitter. New Twitter is like, it is there as a social experiment to make us hate each other and think that we are the most divided, most hideous nation in the world, full of just haters. And I just don't believe that that is the case. I think one of the things I saw at the DNC this year was the diversity and the unity that America really has. You are seeing, you know, people from across the nation who are of every color and creed and age and race and gender. And we are out there together saying we believe in this country. We believe in moving forward. We believe in human rights and workers' rights. And it was a wonderful reminder that we are not these red and blue divided states, that we really are the United States of America. And it is a place we could get back to again if we were all kind of looking to do that, which I think most people actually are.
I think people are tired of the division. I think people are exhausted. I think they are exhausted with the anger and the hatred and the finger pointing. And I think a lot of folks want to get past that. If you're just joining us, our guest is Lee McGowan. She is known as the Politics Girl. You can find her all over social media at I Am Politics Girl. And she has a New York Times number one best-selling book that just hit. It's called The Return to Common Sense, How to Fix America Before We Really Blow It. Lee, I have a clip from one of your videos recently about what's been going on in some of the states regarding voting. Calvin, let's play that first clip, please.
He's not trying to sway new voters. And he keeps going around saying he doesn't even need votes, that they have all the votes they need. In fact, he just did an interview with Fox News where he said he wouldn't run in 2028 if he loses. But then he said, let's just hope we're successful in this one. Not let's hope we win this one. Let's hope we're successful. People should think it's weird that Republicans don't seem to care about how bad their candidate is, that they don't seem to care that Project 2025 came out and we can all read for ourselves how awful their plans for America are. And it's weird that so many swing states are suddenly changing election laws and purging voters or making it harder to vote or count the votes just weeks before the election.
Yeah, that seems some things that make you go, this seems not good. I think you're muted, Lee.
Sorry, not good indeed, Jane. I would say that is entirely true. And I would say your audience probably knows that better than anyone else because Wisconsin is kind of like the state where they were trying out a lot of this terrible anti-democratic stuff. I mean, I think you guys acted like a beta test for a really long time. I mean, it's just terrible. The work that the people of Wisconsin have really done at this point to hold off some of the worst attacks from right-wing Republicans over the past couple of years has been really successful. I mean, I think that what we're seeing right now is a candidate who's not running, like I said in the rant, in swing states. He's not trying to, you know, sway new voters. He's not trying to change hearts and minds. He's out here telling you who to hate. You know, only he can fix it. And he's has his people in states around this nation making sure people can't vote, purging voter rolls. They're going to be challenging votes after they've been counted. There's going to be election vigilantes at voting sites. They're trying to make it as hard as possible to vote. And I keep saying to people, if you are a voter, it doesn't matter if you're a Republican voter, an independent voter, a Democratic voter, if you are a voter and one party is trying this hard to disenfranchise voters, whether that is the party you don't like, even if it's the Democrats, and you say, well, I'm winning because the Democrats are the ones being disenfranchised, you're not winning, because at the end of the day, you're a voter. And if you give a party the power to disenfranchise voters and not have their vote count and not have their voice heard, eventually you're going to give those people enough power that they won't need your vote either. And I think people need to remember that, that it is so essential that we protect the vote, not just so our party wins, but so the people win. Because ultimately, if we don't have a voice, what do we have? We have nothing. We are Russia. We are Hungary. We are China under Xi Jinping.
But I think Wisconsinites, by electing Justice Janet Protasiewicz and getting her on the Supreme Court, by undoing some of the gerrymandering, I think Wisconsinites got fed up after all of these years of nothing getting done because one party had almost all of the power and could just say, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this instead, and there's nothing you can do about it.
I think one of the things, too, yeah. What you just brought up, Lee, was we've talked about on this show is that you can love Donald Trump. You can, you know, wear his hats, go to his rallies, do all the things. But if Project 2025 comes out, if it gets enacted, there will come a day where the goalposts will be changed and you are not patriotic enough. They will change their mind and say, well, you had 4 signs out, but we need 6 signs. Sorry. And they're going to change the rules. And no matter how much you supported him, you won't be enough for his America. And that for me is it's one of the most infuriating parts because if you like Trump, whatever, I'm not even gonna say I like it, but whatever, but you put so much, you know, put so much heart into it. And we've watched him just throw away his supporters left and right, from the famous to the unfamous. And the fact that people can't see that the goalposts will change is it's crazy, because you try to tell them, like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. You're just a liberal. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, it's distressing, because at the end of the day, Donald Trump is looking out for Donald Trump. Mm. But I also think that it's, you know, like you're saying, you just look around at the people that were his ultimate loyalists, people like Rudy Giuliani. Didn't pay him, threw him under the bus. Now he's disbarred. He'll probably go to jail. You know what I mean? Like, he has no loyalty to people. It doesn't matter how loyal they were to him. And he certainly has no loyalty to the people. At the end of the day, he's going to end up doing what he ends up doing. Quite frankly, I think Donald Trump should be concerned, because that Project 2025 plan, he's the vehicle to get those people across yes. the finish line. He is not the end game. J.D. Vance is the end game, an empty vessel that stands for nothing and will do everything that the powers that be and the moneyed interests want him to do. That is who they want. Donald Trump will be 25th. He will fall out a window. He will drink a tainted Diet Coke. Something will happen, because they don't need Donald past centering the government around themselves and changing all the rules using things like Schedule F and making the federal government answerable only to the executive branch and the president. Donald Trump will think that's for himself. But ultimately, it will only be for the powers that be of people like the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation and those giant money big players.
Well, and what I find so interesting about Project 2025, Lee, is the fact that they put it online. Either they just, I mean, the arrogance level to me is a new, that reached a new height. It's either they thought no one's going to read 900 pages, or they thought they are so much within their own bubble that they think, but everybody's going to love this. Who's not going to love Project 2025, eliminating FEMA and eliminating the National Weather Service and the National Hurricane Center? It's going to be great. So I find that stunning. Either that they just think it's so great that everyone's going to jump on board, or that, oh, who's going to pay attention to this?
Yeah, it's one or the other. I mean, I think a lot of us who are independent media people, we are paying attention. My top of the year podcast on the Politics Girl podcast was on Project 2025, and it was well before anyone was talking about it. And it made it into the book because I was writing the book last year. And it really is something people should be deeply concerned about. But also, they need to understand that if they don't get it this year, if Donald Trump, for whatever reason, and I believe he will not win, it's just going to become Project 2029.
Oh, yeah.
And people need to understand that. This is a long-term goal.
No, you're absolutely right. Donald Trump is the vessel to get this going. But they don't, after this year, they won't need him. They will. This is the Republican plan, or the Federalist Society plan, for the next Republican administration, no matter who it is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt. I mean, the whole point is to center the government around their ideals, their thought of who an American is, their Christian nationalism. It really does have a lot to do with Christian nationalism.
Yeah.
And we need to be really clear about that.
We are going to continue our conversation with Lee McGowan. She is the Politics Girl. You can find her on all the socials at I Am Politics Girl. Subscribe to her podcast. Pick up her book, The Return to Common Sense, How to Fix America Before We Really Blow It. We'll be right back. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast and global Civic Media Radio Network.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Wrapping up hour one of this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll go to the Todd Alba Show. Todd visited Ripon this week for Vice President Harris's campaign stop in the town. He spoke with Mandy Kimes, executive director of the Ripon Area Chamber of Commerce, about the history of the Little White Schoolhouse, the birthplace of the Republican Party. They discuss a fun story about a politically themed community baseball game.
Welcome back live on location here from Ripon, Wisconsin. It's the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are live in front of the Little White Schoolhouse, the birthplace of the Republican Party, a historic site here in beautiful Ripon, Wisconsin. Thank Matt Flynn, of course, for coming on the show. As always, fantastic. Also, thanks to Dan Schaefer, our political editor here at Civic Media and founder of the Recombobulation Area. But we want to wrap things up where we started, and that is with Mandy Kimes, the executive director of the Ripon Area Chamber of Commerce. Mandy, thanks for coming back on the show here to help us round things off.
I just want more time hanging out.
We've already gotten a couple of comments from people that say she should be on the radio more, and I agree.
Oh, that's so nice. I was not a big history buff before moving into this role, and I can't help but dig into the history more and more, and I feel like it does change how I lead and how I live. And so I'd love to tell more people about it on the radio someday.
Well, and again, we came up here today because Vice President Kamala Harris is going to be campaigning here, and she is bringing along with her former Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney, a longtime Republican, comes from the Cheney family, ultimate Republicans, ultimate conservatives. And it's notable that they chose the birthplace of where Republican Party started. And you have a great story, and timely indeed, because our friends at Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers, a great film about baseball. And we'll get more into this tomorrow, telling you about some of the great locations where this film is being opened this weekend. There are a couple of places that it closes tonight, so be aware of that. And check Just a Bit Outside, themovie.com, to find out more about this great movie. But baseball plays into this historic courthouse in Ripon, Wisconsin.
Yeah, so we have an incredible historic society. It's actually the longest running one in the state of Wisconsin. And so we've gone into the archives and found all the pictures, all of the things we can about the Little White Schoolhouse. And one of my favorite stories that really solidified this building in my heart was finding that when the community was rallying together to save the Little White Schoolhouse and allow it to be preserved, they really got everyone involved, whether you were a business owner or you were just a resident. You can even see like who gave $5 and who gave $500. Like we have their handwritten signature. But one of the things they did was create a community baseball game. And they decided that the team's names would be the Democrats and the Republicans. And I'm not sure how they decided who was on which right. team. But they were able to raise a great amount of money during that game. And the game actually ended in a tie, which I find just, I don't know if that was purposeful or, right. but I think it was just such a cool picture of a community saying, you know, wherever you're from in this, this is part of our history. This is something worth preserving. Let's do it together. And it really within 10 days, they raised what then was $1,200, which now is just, I mean, it's an incredible amount of money. And yeah. so it's just that kind of community spirit that I think it represents that, you know, country over party, that ability to put aside differences and come together about things that matter. And I love that picture.
I think that's a wonderful story. And again, that's so much what Civic Media is about. It's so much about what we try to make this program about, is finding ways for people from all political dynamics to come together to help our communities. And whether or not you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, whatever your affiliation is politically, to have this piece of history preserved, mm-hmm. because that's the only way, in my opinion, that we could get better as communities and a nation, is learn from both our mistakes and our successes. And the fact that people could come here and learn the true meaning of what it meant to be a Republican when this party was founded, and the fact that both Republicans and Democrats came together through a baseball game to help raise money to preserve this, I think it's fantastic.
It's beautiful. And honestly, Ripon has a great history of people being involved in their, you know, the people at this meeting went on to be part of the legislature. The Republican Party grew. One of the things that makes this unique is the Republican Party continued. A lot of political parties were started back then, but this one really remained and grew in strength. And eventually, you know, 1860, we had Abraham Lincoln. Like, right. And he was not the first Republican candidate. He was the first Republican president. So that's something I didn't really know before about John C. Fremont. But it's so fun and it's so inspiring, and it's something that we can all look to and remember, you know, especially in days like today.
About a minute and a half left. I want to give you a chance. Ripon has a lot more than just the Little White Schoolhouse as the executive director of the Chamber of Commerce. Give us your 90-minute elevator pitch. Why should people come to Ripon and check it out?
90 minutes? Oh, man. Wow.
Honestly, I am the welcome wagon for Ripon. And so whether you're really into history, obviously we're the place for you. We have amazing dining opportunities. We're home to Knuth Brewing Company, which is now selling wholesale all across the state of Wisconsin. Vines and Rushes, we have our own winery here.
Really?
We have fine dining, to elevated pub food, to wood fire pizzas, and Jay's barbecue, amazing barbecue. So definitely come for the food, come for the unique shops. Every business owner has a story. Every business is very unique, and they really want to know who you are and find something that's perfect for you. We're home to the first Marcus Theater ever. It's definitely a very old, not super updated theater, but it's the first, and we love that. We have beautiful trails. We're right by Green Lake. There's just so much to do here, outdoors, indoors, in winter, in summer. And I never thought I would love Ripon the way I do, but it's honestly, it's the heart of the Midwest. It's the most picturesque small town, and people really do care for each other. And so 13 years later, I'm still here, and I'm proud to be a Riponite for sure.
Well, you segue so nicely, because our friends at Marcus Theaters are one of the main theaters that is carrying this great new movie just a bit outside,
nice.
The store of the 82 Brewers. So great to be here. I didn't know that Marcus yeah. Theaters started here.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, they'll always keep it open. It's only $6 to go. And it's fun to think that Harrison Ford went and saw a movie there, and now I go and see him in the movie. Like, I just, you know, it kind of blows
amazing.
My mind a little.
Check it out, MarcusTheaters.com. Also, check out JustABitOutsideTheMovie.com. Ripon website?
Oh, it's just Ripon-WI.com. So
there
definitely look it up.
Mandy Kimes, thank you so much. Executive Director here at the Chamber of Commerce in Ripon. Thanks to all of our guests. Thanks to you for listening. Stay tuned for Maggie Dawn. Whatever you're fighting for, whatever you believe in, keep banging your drum. More coverage on the Harris visit later here in Civic Media.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.